Welcome to our deep dive today. We're going to be unpacking a really fascinating period of history.
Okay.
British colonial administration in India.
Sounds good.
And how it transformed their legal, fiscal, and educational systems between 1757 and 1947.
Okay.
So buckle up, because we're going to be uncovering how those changes modernized India.
Yes.
While also kind of imposing foreign values.
Yeah.
It's a complex story, with a legacy that continues to echo even today.
It really is.
Now, it's important to remember that when the British first arrived in India, they didn't exactly have a master plan for ruling such a vast and diverse place.
Right.
Their early focus was really on trade and profit.
Absolutely.
The East India Company wasn't exactly known for its cultural sensitivity or anything like that.
Right.
Those early agents barely left their coastal enclaves, and most of them couldn't even speak Indian languages.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine that?
It's mind-boggling to think they were trying to run a country they barely even understood.
Yeah, exactly. That lack of knowledge combined with the ever-present temptation for personal gain made those early years of British rule pretty chaotic.
So how did this band of traders morph into a colonial power?
Well, it was a gradual process marked by several key events.
Okay.
One pivotal figure was Warren Hastings, the first Governor General of Bengal.
Okay.
He really pushed for the East India Company to take a more active role in governance.
So a shift from commerce to control.
Precisely. And this shift was fueled in part by the regulating acts passed by the British Parliament.
Okay.
These acts aimed to bring the East India Company under government control and, importantly, forced its agents to act as trustees for the people of India.
Okay.
It's a fascinating example of a trading company.
Right.
Evolving, perhaps reluctantly, into a colonial power.
Talk about an identity crisis.
I know.
Traders turned rulers. It makes you wonder about the internal struggles within the company during that period.
Yeah.
So once they were in charge, how did they go about reshaping India's existing systems?
Well, let's start with the legal system.
Oh.
The British introduced a new legal framework based on British common law, establishing courts and codifying laws. This replaced the diverse and often complex legal systems that have been in place for centuries.
It sounds like a complete overhaul.
Mm.
Did this new system bring more fairness, or did it just impose foreign values on the Indian people?
That's a complex question, and historians continue to debate the impact of these legal reforms.
Okay.
On the one hand, the new legal system aimed to be more uniform and predictable.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it was undeniably a tool of colonial control.
Right.
And often fail to consider the nuances of local customs and traditions.
A classic example of the double-edged sword of progress and control.
Exactly.
What about the economic side of things? How did the British change India's fiscal systems?
They implemented new revenue collection systems, with one of the most notable being the zamindari system.
Okay.
The system essentially created a new class of landlords, which had significant consequences for land ownership and agriculture.
Oh, wow.
It had a massive impact on rural society and the livelihoods of millions.
So this is where we see the economic gears of colonialism start to turn, shaping the landscape of wealth and power.
Exactly. Yeah. And intertwined with these legal and fiscal reforms.
Yeah.
Were significant changes to the educational system.
Cool.
The British established English language schools and introduced Western literature, philosophy, and science.
I remember reading about that. Their stated goal was to create a class of Indians who were English in taste, in opinions, in morals, and in intellect. That's quite a statement.
It certainly is. It highlights that tension at the heart of British colonialism.
Right.
The drive to modernize while simultaneously imposing their own values and worldview.
Yeah.
This strategy of cultural assimilation with English education as its cornerstone had a profound and lasting impact.
It's fascinating how those ripples from the past continue to shape India today. But as we move closer to the end of British rule, it's important to remember that the Indian people weren't simply passive bystanders in this process.
Right.
There was resistance, right?
Absolutely. One of the most striking examples of this resistance was the emergence of the Indian National Army, or the INA, led by Subhas Chandra Bose.
Okay.
The INA collaborated with the Axis powers during World War II, aiming to overthrow British rule.
To ally with those fighting Britain?
Mm-hmm.
That's incredibly bold. Did they realistically think they could win?
While their military success was limited, their very existence ignited a wave of national pride in India.
Okay.
They challenged the idea of British invincibility and inspired many to believe that independence was possible.
Wow.
It was a really bold move. Their defiance certainly planted seeds of doubt within that colonial structure. How did it all end? We know India eventually gained independence, but I imagine it wasn't a seamless transition.
You're right. It was a really complex process shaped by so many factors. The pressures of World War II, coupled with the increasingly powerful nationalist movements, eventually led to India's independence in 1947.
But not without a heartbreaking cost. The partition of the country into India and Pakistan resulted in widespread violence and displacement. It's a tragic reminder of the complexities of history and the unintended consequences of even well-intentioned actions.
It's a stark reminder that freedom often comes at a price. Speaking of history, you shared some really fascinating sources with us for this deep dive.
Oh, yes.
I have to admit, I got a little lost down the rabbit hole.
I bet.
Exploring some of those details.
Of course. What stood out to you?
Well, one source, the Cambridge Concise History of Modern India, really brought those early days of British rule to life.
Okay.
Remember how we were talking about the East India Company agents being essentially clueless about India?
Yeah.
This source painted such a vivid picture, stating that they knew nothing about India apart from the requirements of trade, and they almost never ventured outside their coastal enclaves. Can you imagine that level of detachment?
It's remarkable, isn't it, to hold so much power yet have such a limited understanding of the land and its people? This disconnect is really at the heart of many of the challenges that unfolded during British rule.
Exactly. And this source also shed some light on the regulating acts. We talked about those acts as a turning point, forcing the company to take on a more active role in governance.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out the driving force behind those acts was a desire to make the company's agents act as trustees for the people of India.
Trustees. What a fascinating word choice.
Yeah.
It implies a sense of responsibility, a duty of care. Of course, the reality of British rule often fell short of this ideal. But the fact that this language was used is telling.
Right.
It reveals the shifting dynamics of power and a growing recognition that the company's actions have far-reaching consequences.
Right? It makes you think about the different perspectives at play. The British government, the East India Company, the Indian people.
Absolutely.
Each with their own interpretations of what trusteeship meant in practice. It wasn't a simple situation, that's for sure.
Precisely. History is rarely a simple narrative. It's a tapestry woven from multiple threads, often conflicting and intertwined.
Yeah.
Another source that highlighted this complexity was the New Cambridge History of India.
Oh, yes. That one was a goldmine of information.
I know.
It went into such detail about the legal and fiscal reforms we discussed earlier. Remember the Zamindari system? The one that created that new class of landlords?
Yeah.
Well, this source argued that it was a deliberate strategy by the British to reshape India's agricultural landscape and consolidate their control over land revenue.
It's crucial to understand that these reforms weren't simply about modernizing India. They were also about strengthening the economic foundations of British rule.
Yeah.
The Zamindari system, for instance, created a class of loyal intermediaries who are dependent on the British for their position and wealth.
A classic divide and rule strategy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
By empowering a select group, the British aimed to create a buffer between themselves and the vast majority of the Indian population. This source also highlighted the impact of these reforms on traditional power structures.
Right.
It argued that the introduction of British law and the establishment of new courts undermined existing systems of justice and dispute resolution that had been rooted in local communities for generations. It was a clash of values and legal traditions.
So it wasn't just about legal codes. It was about reshaping the very fabric of society.
Yeah.
And this process of transformation, of course, extended to education. Remember how we talked about the British push for English language education?
Absolutely. That was a cornerstone of their strategy.
Yeah.
The source really delved into the motivations behind this policy, arguing that the British saw Western education as a key tool for creating a class of Indians who would be loyal to the British crown and who would help administer the colony.
It was a deliberate attempt at cultural molding.
Yes. And this source also explored the lasting impact of this policy on Indian society. While English education did open up new opportunities for some Indians, it also created a social divide between those who had access to Western learning and those who did not.
A divide with consequences that are still felt today. It reinforced existing social hierarchies and contributed to the emergence of a new elite class that often identified more with British values than with their own cultural heritage. It's a complicated legacy.
Indeed. And it's important to remember that these changes didn't happen without resistance. The source also discussed the Indian National Army, highlighting their role in challenging British rule.
Right, the INA. This source offered some fascinating insights into their motivations, describing how their leader, Subhas Chandra Bose, saw World War II as an opportunity to exploit British weakness and secure India's independence. He was a truly intriguing and controversial figure.
He was.
Willing to take extraordinary risks to achieve his goals.
Bose's willingness to collaborate with the Axis powers certainly made him a controversial figure. However, what's particularly interesting is how the INA's very existence challenged the narrative of British invincibility. Even though they didn't achieve their military objectives,
right,
they struck a blow against the psychological foundations of colonial rule. Their defiance inspired many Indians and contributed to the growing momentum for independence.
It's a powerful example of how, even in defeat, resistance can be a catalyst for change.
Precisely. And as we know, change did come, although not without its challenges. The source also touched upon the partition of India, describing it as a tragic but perhaps inevitable consequence of the long and complex history of British rule.
A sobering reminder that even in moments of liberation, there can be immense pain and upheaval.
Indeed. It underscores the importance of understanding the complexities of history. We can't just celebrate the triumphs. We must also grapple with the tragedies and learn from the mistakes of the past.
And that's what makes these deep dives so rewarding, wouldn't you say? They're not just about acquiring knowledge.
I agree.
They're about expanding our understanding of ourselves and the world around us.
Absolutely.
They challenge us to confront difficult truths and grapple with the complexities of the past.
Couldn't agree more. These conversations are essential for developing a nuanced understanding of history.
Yeah.
They remind us that the past is never truly past. Its echoes resonate in the present, shaping our lives in ways we may not even realize.
So true.
Yeah.
And with that thought in mind, I think it's time to move into the final part of our deep dive.
Okay.
We've explored the intricacies of British colonial administration in India.
Yes.
From those early, almost accidental steps into empire to the eventual transition to independence. But the story doesn't end there, does it?
Not at all. The legacy of British rule continues to shape India today. And unpacking that legacy is what we'll delve into next.
Welcome back to our deep dive into British colonial administration in India. It's been fascinating to unpack these legal, fiscal, and educational reforms, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I think we've covered a lot of ground from those early, almost accidental steps into empire to the tumultuous transition to independence.
Yeah. And as we've been tracing this journey through those sources, I keep coming back to this question of legacy. What is the lasting impact of British rule on India today?
That's a question historians continue to debate. The legacy is complex and multifaceted.
Right.
On one hand, the British did introduce some positive changes.
Okay.
They laid the groundwork for a modern administrative system, introduced new technologies,
right,
and helped to unify a vast and diverse country.
From the sources you shared, it seems like those advancements came at a steep price. What are your thoughts?
Indeed. You have to consider the exploitation of India's resources, the suppression of local cultures, the imposition of foreign values. These are all part of the legacy as well.
Right.
It's like those ripples we talked about earlier, spreading out from the point of impact and continuing to shape the landscape for generations.
So looking at India today, where do you see those ripples?
We'll take the Indian legal system, for example. It's still largely based on the framework established by the British, though it's been adapted over time to reflect India's own unique needs and values.
And the education system too, right?
Yeah.
English remains a dominant language, a direct result of those colonial policies aimed at creating an anglicized elite.
Precisely. And it's not just the language. The structure of the education system itself, with its emphasis on rote learning and exams, can also be traced back to the colonial era.
It's fascinating and a bit unsettling to see how these systems have endured, even as India has evolved into a vibrant democracy with its own distinct identity. What are your thoughts on that?
It really speaks to the enduring power of institutions and how they can shape the trajectory of a nation long after the original architects are gone. It also raises questions about the challenges of decolonization.
It makes you think, doesn't it? It's one thing to gain political independence. It's another to dismantle those deeply embedded systems and structures that were put in place during colonial rule. What insights did your research offer about this?
Well, from what I've read, true decolonization involves not just political liberation, but also a reclaiming of one's own history, culture, and values.
A process of rediscovering and redefining oneself.
Exactly. And that's an ongoing process, a dialogue that continues to unfold in India today.
As we reach the end of our deep dive, what would you say are the most important takeaways from exploring these sources together?
For me, it's the importance of understanding the complexities of history. It's not a simple story of heroes and villains. It's a tapestry woven from multiple perspectives,
right,
each with its own truths and contradictions.
And we must approach history with humility, recognizing that our understanding is always evolving as we uncover new evidence and consider different perspectives. What else stood out to you?
Absolutely. Another key takeaway is the enduring impact of colonialism. Even though the British Empire has crumbled, its legacy continues to shape the world in profound ways. We see it in the global distribution of power, in the persistence of inequality, in the ongoing struggle for cultural identity.
That's a powerful point. It's a reminder that the process of decolonization is not a one-time event, but an ongoing journey that requires critical reflection, courageous action, and a commitment to building a more just and equitable world.
Couldn't agree more. As we navigate the challenges of the present and the uncertainties of the future, let's remember the lessons of history.
Yeah.
Let's draw inspiration from the resilience of those who fought for freedom and justice, and let's use our understanding of the past to create a better future for all.
So, having delved deep into this topic, what's resonating with you most?
What I find most fascinating is how the legacy of these reforms continues to shape contemporary India, from its legal and educational systems to its social and political landscape. It really highlights that lasting impact that colonialism had.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it, how different India might have been without British rule? It's a thought-provoking reminder of the complex interplay of history, culture, and power. So keep questioning, keep exploring. There's always more to discover. We'll see you next time for another deep dive.